Hey everyone, this is Mark Longhurst, your alumni newsletter editor. I'm thrilled to share this interview with CAC staff member Cliff Berrien. Cliff works for the CAC in the customer service department. He also helps with various aspects of program design, and you may have seen him on stage at Conspire 2018. Cliff shares with us about what I think we can call the spiritual practice of customer service, about his passion for music and the contemplative depths of drumming, and about how Barbara Holmes's work has impacted him deeply. Cliff starts off our conversation leading listeners in a brief contemplative practice. I want to let you know that the audio quality is not great in this interview. I'm an admitted novice at sound recording, but the content is so thoughtful that I wanted to share the conversation with you anyway. I hope you enjoy.
Sit in a way that you can place your hands palms up. And it would probably be, you could do either, but closing your eyes would probably be good. If you have them open, let them be down with a soft focus. And just note the sensations in your hands. Just let everything else drop away. And since this is just going to be a very short practice, what I'm going to recommend is that we just, for the next 60 seconds, just let ourselves be our biology. So in other words, just a beating heart. Breathing lungs. Bodily sensations. So for the next few moments, just be your biology. And as you're ready, come back and just let your eyes open gently.
Thank you, Cliff.
Thank you for starting us that way.
You bet. So thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today and to speak with our alumni community. For folks who don't know you, what do you do at the CAC? And can we just start with what does a day in the life of Cliff Berrien look like at the CAC?
It looks a little different every day, but I was hired to be in the customer service department, and an average day starts off with some kind of contemplative sit like we just did. Which is one of my favorite things about the CAC, is being able to start off my day. I told one of my DJ friends that that's how I start my day, and he said, wait a minute, let me get this straight. You get paid to meditate? And then we start looking at cases and phone calls that we have from constituents who need to get into their online course or living school. Students who need to find out how they can have a particular kind of communication with their circle group.
And you're in the customer service department, is that correct?
Okay. That's correct, customer service. And You know, as I'm sure you know, we just passed the line where we have 300,000 daily meditation readers. And in our office, we can tell. Not that we get 300,000 emails, but we get a lot of emails. And particularly this last year has been pretty intense because the themes of the daily meditations have been really challenging for a lot of readers. This week, for example, has been Islam. Mm-hmm. And there are some readers of the daily meditations that don't want Father Richard to talk about Islam in any other than a critical way. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting when I mentioned that to him. I saw him yesterday. He stopped through the office and asked, you know, what kind of responses we've been getting. And I said, well, there have been some that feel challenged by it and want to, there have been some that have just said, I'm done. I can't, you know, if you're going to go there trying to say positive things about Islam, I can't be a subscriber anymore. And Richard's comment was really quite beautiful. He said, you know, it's too bad that so many people feel the need to be so defensive about their own system of beliefs that they need to only consider the bad about a particular tradition or a particular religion. And they're not even willing to look at, the good things. Mm-hmm. And that is what we get quite a bit of, actually. Throughout the year, we've got that a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's crafting, sometimes along with my other customer service team, crafting responses to these emails that we get, and trying to be as helpful as possible to our constituents. We also, you know, our customer service office is next to the visitor center here, and we get visitors pretty much every day. During certain times of the year, certain times of the week, we get many more visitors. That's a great experience. Just people come to the center thinking that it's kind of something, it's a bit of a pilgrimage for them just to come and visit.
Yep. I know it was for me the first time I visited. So you're there both sending emails and responding in the moment to people's concerns and questions. And then you're also there as a friendly face for people who are physically walking in, seeing what the Center for Action and Contemplation is all about. Huh?
Yeah.
That's great. What led you to the CAC in the first place, Cliff?
I was living in Tucson, Arizona, working at a place, working with a dear friend of mine, Teresa Cowan Jones, and she was working on a project there called Sacred Space. And as we were developing Sacred Space and I was telling her about my contributions to it, she kept saying to me, this was 4 years ago, actually 5 years ago now, I really think you need to meet Richard Rohr. I think you'd like the work that he's doing, and I think you would just really appreciate it, and they'd appreciate you as well. And I actually applied for a job at that time that was open, but it was already filled. Actually, it was Gigi's job.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. And folks listening will almost all know Gigi because she's on the Living School staff.
And I'm so glad she is. And she does a fantastic job, and much better than I could have done. But a couple of years later, I moved back to Albuquerque and tried to get work here doing what I've been doing for the majority of the last 35 years of my life. I've mostly been a musician, a music educator, and a professional DJ.
No kidding.
Yeah, but when I came to Albuquerque, there was not very much work. There was not work in many of the venues or at any of the colleges or universities. It was the longest period that I had without work in my life, in my adult life. And it just so happened that my wife found a job posting from the CAC. And I said, I might as well go for it. I didn't get the position, but hopefully I can do this. And I was very excited when I got it. You know, I have actually never done professional customer service except in the capacity that I was doing it as a DJ. But I have to tell you, from the first weeks that I started, I saw, this might sound a little weird, but I saw the kind of the spiritual discipline required to do it well. Because every single day we're challenged by people calling us with various emotions, from a call just about an hour ago of a woman who, at the end of her conversation, she didn't let the customer service agent say one word. She just had to call and rant for 5 minutes about the Catholic Church, clergy sex scandal. Mm-hmm. She was nonstop for 5 minutes. She didn't, never raised her voice, but she said some pretty angry things. Mm-hmm. And then hung up on the agent. And, you know, every day there's something like that that's like emotionally challenging you, and to be empathetic and yet not overwhelmed is work. It's emotional work. It's spiritual work as well, especially when if they do stay on the line and want to talk, or on the email and want to continue the conversation, it really, you really have to bring everything to it.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. I've never thought before about the spiritual practice of customer service. And you could think of customer service as just managing people's responses and complaints, but to show up, as I'm hearing you do, in a contemplative way that is present to the person and respects the dignity, the human spiritual dignity of the person, that's pretty profound. So thank you for sharing that, and gives a new window into customer service work from a contemplative perspective.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's what we really feel our job is to take Father Richard's and the CAC's work, mission, and vision, and actualize it with our constituents every single day in as many ways as we can. And the last thing, and the other things, I occasionally work with the program design team, contributing contemplative practices that I've learned over the years of my life experience and experiences as a musician. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's the other thing that I do. And at some times of the year, I do that more often. There are little things that we do here at CAC, like we have a Mystic Soul group that meets every week, ever since the beginning of the year. Have Barbara Holmes' Joy Unspeakable book study group. Mm-hmm. Little things like that we weave throughout whenever.
That's wonderful. I want to get to some of your background in a minute, but you mentioned that you're working with the program design team and they helped out with music. And it was so fun to see. I was streaming the Conspire Conference from my little rural outpost in Williamstown, Western Massachusetts. And I saw you up there with I think you had a brass band, which made me so happy to see. And I think that was you pounding on a drum during that time, am I correct?
Yeah.
So what's it been like to bring some of your spiritual background and your love for music into thinking about contemplation and creating space for collective contemplation?
That's a beautiful question. That's a beautiful question. It's been wonderful and it's been a challenge because my background in primarily Afro-diasporic drumming traditions is, I mean, almost every tradition I can think of, there's some syncretism in, I'm talking about the drumming traditions here, there's some syncretism that touches on Christianity, Western Christianity, at various points. But it's usually, how can I say this? Yeah, this has just started changing. I'm sure you're aware of it, probably more than I am. You know, when the enslaved people, let's take Brazil as an example, when they started wanting to reconnect with their own traditions, they were only able to do so in the context of Catholic Christianity, because that, you know, being a church was the only thing that the slave masters would allow. So they start to couch these, many of the African diasporic deities disguised as some of the Christian saints, Catholic saints. So there's a tradition of doing that that's almost 400 years old. But it seems like now recently, some of the African, for example, contemplative traditions are moving into some of the, you know, the traditional Western churches. So, you know, whether it's the gospel choirs at the Catholic church I grew up in Washington, D.C., they have a gospel choir and they have a praise dance, you know, things that are part of the Black church for probably the last, you know, 50 years or more, are now part of those traditions. But it feels a little new bringing it into this community of contemplatives. You know, one of the questions that we got when Father Richard talked about drumming as a contemplative practice, I mean, people would literally write in and go, how's that possible? They couldn't see a connection between drumming and contemplative tradition because they think of contemplation as something that has to happen in quiet.
Yeah.
It has to be quiet, right, and peaceful. And so there's, you know, there's some challenge about how to present traditions that are new and different to most Christians in the United States anyway. It's a little challenging at times, mm-hmm, but it's also a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, well, I so appreciate the spirit that you're bringing to that, especially as I streamed Conspire, and I did notice musical diversity that was just wonderful, and it brought a joyful spirit, I thought, a celebratory spirit, while also capturing the soul of some of the hard content that was engaged. And just to reflect back, I also hear that, and something I'm trying to learn more about, is that we're at this point, I think, in the contemplative movements where at least folks who have previously thought contemplation was about primarily meditation are realizing that the framing of that has happened through white Europeans, and that contemplation has many histories and not just that history. And so I'm trying to learn. I love the mystics, as you know, that I've learned in the Living School. You know, John of the Cross is my hero, Teresa of Avila. I love all of them. I'm trying to learn about their history, but then I also view it as part of my practice to begin learning about traditions that might not have been named contemplative, but that are very much about that direct experience of God, drumming, etc. So I really appreciate the spirit and breadth that you're bringing to that.
Thank you so much, Mark. I mean, one of my core things that I hope to bring to the CAC is a sense of helping to support and promote cultural dexterity. And this is a way of doing it, because my personal life experiences with drumming is it's definitely been the most powerful contemplative practice I've engaged in. And as I said, I was a pretty much a full-time drummer for 30 years and had some amazing experiences with drums and with music, with dance, that I am grateful to see the CAC, Father Richard, open to the idea that quiet sitting is not the end of the contemplative journey. Mm-hmm. It's one practice among many, many.
Amen. In my turn, I grew up evangelical Christian, so sometimes we say amen when we agree or when we're excited. So that's my amen. One of the recent Conspire conference speakers was Barbara Holmes, and in Barbara's work, she talks about the collective traditions of contemplation from from the perspective of the enslaved and the oppressed. And I just wonder, you mentioned you are have been doing a book study on Joy Unspeakable, and I just wonder how Barbara's work has been impacting you lately.
Barbara's work has impacted me a lot. For the last maybe 10 years or so since I've been aware of it, it has been a powerful influence in my life. All of the books that I've read by her, and I've only read three, they have just shifted the way I think about contemplation. I didn't really, you know, in the drumming traditions I was playing in and that I have learned, no one ever used the word contemplation for what we were doing. It was only after reading Barbara that I started putting those two things together. She has just a beautiful way of tying together her understanding of the African-American history and its connection with the contemplative traditions in its various forms, threads of Islam, threads of indigenous African traditions. And I was personally so grateful that I could tie in with some of what the program design team had decided to present at Conspire, that I could tie that in with what Barbara was teaching. As an example, I'm sure you heard it, but we talked about the moan. Mm-hmm. And that was just a beautiful experience. You could really feel the audience at Conspire kind of get it, that humming together, singing together, moving together has a power and a way to connect us to something beyond our mere ideas about it. And I feel like...
Oh, excuse me. I just want to insert for alumni who might not have listened to Conspire, the moan Barbara Holmes talks about is the collective groaning, and correct me if I'm getting it wrong, is the collective groaning of people who came over in the Middle Passage, there's a prayer from the depths of enslavement and suffering, and that is contemplation, that is the soul's cry, the body's crying out to God collectively. Is that your understanding as well?
That's it. And it's a collective, and I highly recommend to any of the Living School students, because the few examples that there are on YouTube are very short. So I really recommend just, YouTubing Moaning in the Spirit. And the few, I found out from one of my dear friends who grew up in the South, that there are many churches in the South that still practice this. And so, like, he was telling me that when he grew up, well, one of his aunts would take him to their church. And he and his sister used to be almost afraid to go to this church, because the first half hour of every service was people just moaning. And his father once described the sound of that first half hour as the sound that you would hear, you know, if there was a soundtrack for someone dying.
Wow.
I mean, it was just so, you know, but live, from live voices.
Yep.
And I realized that these churches that still do this practice, Mark, they're connecting all the way back to those slave ships. You know, it's like, I know the other churches, we sing our hymns and we sing our whatever, but it's rare to go back to that place where you're going to that grief place for the millions, you know, enslaved and those who died in the Middle Passage. It's very powerful. Very powerful thing, learning about that. And to have just a taste of it at Conspire with this audience of 1,000 people, at least, you know, you could sense, I felt very, it was a wonderful opportunity to be in front and actually hear them humming, actually hear them singing, wade in the water with us. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful.
Mm, wow. Yeah, that's very, very moving. Thank you for sharing that and reflecting on that. I'm curious, now that you've jumped into the stream of the Christian contemplative tradition, and you have this background as a DJ and musician, does it cause you to look back on in a different frame from your DJ work and your music work? And I'm curious how you're reflecting on that part of your work in the past now that you're have plunged into the contemplative frame.
That's a beautiful question. I've been I grew up Catholic, and then I had a survivor of abuse from a priest and a nun. So I left the church because that experience confused me so much and made me so angry. But more than anything, it made me wonder, how could God be there? You know? And so I started looking, I started searching. And one of the first things that I found was Mahatma Gandhi, because he was kind of a connection because of Martin Luther King, right? Talking about Mahatma Gandhi's teachings, he was a connection to the Christian teachings for me. Yep. And that was kind of a way in to start to learn about contemplative traditions, meditation. So I was around 17 when I started meditating, meditation techniques, and it has always been an important thread in my life. Actually, it's been the lifeline throughout my life that has always been there. It saved me. But the new part has been more the Christian part, the Christian content. It was easier to bring in to make connections between, for example, my studies in Taoism or Buddhism, the African traditions that I was learning and teaching, because there was a lot of embodiment in Buddhism and in Taoism, for example, just as a couple examples. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but the challenge has been finding the places of embodiment in the Christian traditions.
Yeah.
And I'm always excited when I find them out. Uh-huh. You know, I'm always excited when I find the connections. For example, just use Taizé as an example.
Yeah, sure.
Taizé chant is so similar to many of the chanting traditions in the East and in Africa. You know, it's different than Gregorian chant and a lot of what we think of as music from the Christian and Western tradition. That's more polyphonic, emphasis on different voices, individual different voices of being combined and to create this beautiful thing. And that is profound. That music is profound, and I've had profound experiences listening and playing it. But there's something about this tradition of focusing on one word or one sound or one phrase being repeated that's very powerful, that I was grateful when I found out that the Christian tradition did have that. Because that was some of the more powerful experiences for me. That repeated phrase is a little bit more like drumming. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you tend to be playing one line over and over and interacting with other people. I hope that's making sense. And
yeah, that makes sense. Well, it's, you know, it's a gift to the Christian contemplative movement that you bring with such a broad understanding of contemplation to it. That's what I'm hearing.
I hope so. I hope so, because it's very rich, Mark. It's very, very rich. The Christian, I keep learning new things about it. And thanks to the teachers that we have, you know, and Cynthia and Jim and Richard, I keep getting doors open to new understandings of the Christian tradition. I appreciate it.
Maybe one way into the question is simply to ask, what does contemplation mean for you today as you're thinking about it?
Contemplation for me today, it's interesting because I did spend most of my life, like a lot of the people that tend to come to the tradition, thinking that contemplation was about something quiet that happened in a quiet space. And the kind of thing that I did when I was drumming, for example, couldn't be that. But there's something that happens in contemplation where the mystery is closer to you than at other moments when you're just distracted and flitting about and doing all the busy things we do as human beings. Contemplation is full engagement in life, but from a place that is centered in a kind of grace and ease. So no matter what is going on, the grace and ease are there. And that can definitely happen sitting silently, as it has most of my life. But the Taoist practices that I engage, for example, Qigong, I mean, there's movement, but there's always an awareness of a still point. Mm-hmm. And drumming, there were times when I was drumming where, I just will give you one example. I used to go to something called California Brazil Camp and study Brazilian drumming with about 150 or so other drummers from all over the world. And there was one time where there were like 125 of us playing. I had to have earplugs in because it was so loud. It was so loud. Imagine the drums that we had. There were four drummers there going on the stage to conspire. This was 150 drummers playing those kinds of drums. I had earplugs in. The sound was so loud. And at one point, I pulled the earplugs out. It didn't make any difference. It was still as loud. It was just... It was like, and we were doing a small version of the drumming ensembles that happened in Brazil with up to 500 drummers. There was a place, Mark, in all that sound and movement that was one of the more prayerful opportunities I've ever had in my life. I can't describe why. I can't describe... You know, and it wasn't, obviously it wasn't crisis contemplation, because it was not a crisis, mm-hmm. unless you want to talk about the crisis that it might have been causing my ears. I'm trying to remember now. I wish I could remember. I'm reading a book called Super Better. I hope I'm not taking too many asides here.
Oh, no, and I'll probably edit some down, but yeah, it's all good.
Okay, I'm reading a book called Super Better, and she uses a term, because Barbara talks about, related to crisis contemplation, she talks about post-traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. Some experiences, like drumming together, can lead to post-traumatic growth. And a lot of experiences can lead to post-traumatic growth. For a lot of people, the same experience that leads some people to post-traumatic stress, it leads to post-traumatic growth. And I guess that's just a little piece that I would want to bring into even this, to jump back to talking about the depths and the descent. There's growth possible in those places. And that's what I found from the drumming traditions as one example, and the DJing as another, with people's bodies interacting with music. There was a place there that could be so prayerful on the dance floor. So prayerful. It's hard to explain it if you haven't experienced it. You know, it's hard for people to believe it, but if you've experienced it, you know exactly what I mean, and your smile tends to suggest that you know what I'm talking about.
I understand what you're saying. You know, it puts a whole new spin on the still point of the turning world from T.S. Eliot, doesn't it?
I mean, did Eliot know anything about the Sufis, for example?
I have no idea. I don't know enough about T.S. Eliot to know, but it's the way I hear that line is that he was tapping into something universal.
Yeah, because I spent 2 years doing Sufi practice, and drumming was one of our practices. And to be, you have to learn the technique so that you don't fall, but at one point you can actually have your eyes closed and you're just doing this movement, and there's just there's this whirling, but again, there's as Eliot said, there's a still point. Mm-hmm. That is just so exquisite. And, you know, the call that I hear from Richard and the other contemplative teachers and Barbara is all to find that still point in other experiences. I mean, Barbara talks about it. I don't know if you remember the beginning of that book, but one of the first times she brings up crisis contemplation is in a field. Relatives, she's not there, but she's describing it. Relatives of hers waiting in this field for the KKK to come. So that's where I'm at right now with contemplation, is how could we bring it to everything? That's the question, right? That's the koan, as the Zen tradition would say. How do we bring it to this?
Mm-hmm. Last question for you, Cliff. What are two mystics, however you want to define mystic, musician, artist, poet, writer, teacher, what are two mystics, either living or dead, that are inspiring you in your journey right now?
Thank you. I love that question. Howard Thurman is one that's inspiring me a lot now. His writing seems to have wings. I mean, my mind is just, I love exploring his writing. I was introduced to him through Barbara's work. So I'm just starting to go into his work. And I love it so much. I don't even know what to say about it. You know, I definitely can't speak about it with any depth, because I'm just starting to grasp the place it takes me is just deeper and deeper, and I appreciate it. The second one then will be Kamasi Washington. There's a African-American jazz saxophone player named Kamasi Washington. He's a young man. He's in his mid-30s, maybe. I mean, his newest album is called Heaven and Earth. And, you know, I mean, everything I've tried to say in words, and I don't feel like I've said very much, but I wish I could. And I feel like everything that I could say in words of my understanding of contemplation and of spirit, he's saying it so beautifully today. And he's bringing in some aspects of the traditional jazz ethic, as well as hip-hop elements. He's bringing it all in there. And it's, to me, his music is modern-day hymn. It's beautiful. I read, as part of Conspire, I read part of the words of one of his songs called Will You Sing? If I could remember it right now, but I can't off the cuff. But I recommend for our living students to check it out. Check Kamasi Washington out. Lastly, two living school students. I'm going to be really fast. One is Tonita Gonzalez. I'm considering her and another living school student, Arthur Jones, two of my huge contemplative inspirations right now. Arthur Jones wrote a book called Wade in the Water that I'm reading right now that is just so, so very beautiful. His understanding of the African-American spiritual tradition is and so much depth to it. And secondly, Tonita Gonzalez, she's turning me on to the Mujerista kind of movement. And I'm just grateful to her as well.
It's been a real joy and honor for me to be in conversation with you. So I want to thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for your work at the CAC and for sharing with the alumni community today.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much.